This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and today I'm honored to be joined by three visionary storytellers, acclaimed documentary creators, and award-winning filmmakers, one of whom is also a legal visionary who helped shape modern family law and women's rights, and she's also a host. All of them are shaping stories that matter through film and documentary. They're here to talk today about their new and very important web series, which we'll tell you all about. My guests today are Karen Chopsiewicz, Barry Cohn, and Linda Silver-Dranoff, the brilliant minds behind Fairly Equal, Conversations Towards a Feminist Future, a timely, urgent, and compelling digital web series that looks squarely at today's threats to women's equality rights and the future of women's social and political gains made through decades of feminist activism, which are increasingly under threat in Canada, the U.S., and globally. Before we meet these awe-inspiring women behind this powerful project, let me tell you all a little bit more about them, starting with Karen Chopsiewicz, whom I know very well. She's been a guest many times on this show. She's a Peabody Award-winning producer, director, editor, and camera person whose work has been screened nationally and internationally. She was the director of TVO's Magic Shadows, Elwe Yost, A Life in Movies. She also co-produced and edited Mutter's Hands. Karen was the producer, director, editor, and second camera person of The Other Side of the Hero, a doc about first responders and PTSD, which aired on CBC Documentary Channel and has been screened all across North America at several festivals and events. Other doc highlights include My Father's Camera, which went on to win a prestigious Peabody Award, as well as CBC's Canada's War in Color, and the very important CBC documentary, One Summer at Camp Winston. That's one truly after my own heart. She was also the producer, director, writer, and editor of the award-winning My Grandparents Had a Hotel. Karen has worked as a director and editor on dozens of productions, including Angel Light, which starred Sheila McCarthy, who's also been a guest on this show. Karen has a master's in fine arts in film and video from York University, a bachelor of journalism honors from Carleton University, and a certificate in feature film writing from UCLA Extension Writers Studio. Karen Chopsiewicz, it's the longest bio in the history, but so worth it. Welcome back to Finding Your Bliss. Barry Cohn is the co-producer and director of Fairly Equal, Conversations Towards a Feminist Future. She's an award-winning producer, director, writer, and consultant. Among her awards and nominations are those for her feature documentary, Unloved, Huronia's Forgotten Children. It's tremendous, by the way. And for Toxic Trespass, Children's Health and the Environment. She also co-produced Phyllis Ellis's feature film, Toxic Beauty, which garnered an international Emmy nomination and several CSA awards, along with Banff Rocky and DGC nominations. Cohn's film, Unloved, premiered at Hot Docs in 2022 and won the third prize audience award, a DGC award, and was nominated for four CSA awards. She recently completed story editing and production consulting on the feature doc film for Omni and Knowledge Network, Exclusion, A Century of Silence, which uses the filmmaker's POV and family history to delve into the shocking history of Canada's anti-Chinese racist immigration policies. Barry Cohn, welcome to Finding Your Bliss. Linda Silver-Dranoff is a lawyer, writer, and activist. As a lawyer in private practice, she appeared at every level of court in a precedent-setting career, helping countless individuals navigate the legal system. As an author and columnist, she provided Canadians with access to accurate, understandable, and empowering legal information throughout her 25-year stint as a columnist at Chatelaine and as the author of Women in Canadian Law, A History, Every Woman's Guide to the Law, Every Canadian's Guide to the Law, and most recently, A Memoir and History of the Women's Movement, Fairly Equal, Lawyering the Feminist Revolution. As an activist, she's advanced the cause of equality and social justice for Canadian women. Linda Silver-Dranoff was honored with the Law Society Medal by the Governor General, with the Persons Award, and by the Toronto YWCA as a woman of distinction. The Canadian and Ontario Bar Associations recognized her for her contributions to the law with their Distinguished Service Award, the Family Law Award of Excellence, and the Feminist Legal Analysis Award for commitment to equality. The Women's Law Association of Ontario gave her the Presence Award. Her alma mater, University College at the University of Toronto, honored her as an alumni of influence among the initial group of 100 honorees who graduated between 1853 and 2012. And in 2025, she was honored with the Women in Law Leadership Rosalie Silberman Abella Award for Lifetime Achievement. She was also appointed a member of the Order of Canada in 2012 and the Order of Ontario in 2019. Her latest effort, along with Barry and Karen, is Fairly Equal Conversations Towards a Feminist Future, a new web series that looks at today's threats to women's equality rights and warrants that we cannot take past advances for granted. Karen, Barry, and Linda, congratulations on all of this, and welcome to the program. Today's conversation is really so powerful, timely, and deeply important, but I also think it's filled with hope and possibilities. Karen, I'd like to start with you, and welcome back to the show. How did you originally meet Linda Silver-Dranoff, and why did you think it was important to create this project together and put it on the web?
I love this question. Okay, I will tell you. After I did the LWO's documentary, a friend of Linda's, Elaine Waithglass, tracked me down and said, "You must meet Linda. Linda is amazing. You must get to know her." And we met, Linda, and you told me about you and all of your accomplishments. And I had one thought: Barry Cohen, which was, I need to call Barry Cohen.
Wow.
Because we need to do something about Linda. I had worked with Barry over the years. We've known each other forever. And I just knew that if this project was going to happen, I would have to team up with Barry. So
that was
basically it. And when I started to read more about Linda and got to know who you are, Linda, and what you stand for, I was blown away. And we had to do it.
Isn't that wonderful? Barry, so along with your colleague, filmmaker Karen Chopsiewicz, you created a 5-part digital web-based series of conversations with leading figures on the future of feminism. And of course, it's hosted by author and legendary feminist family lawyer, Linda Silver-Dranoff. And in it, Barry, you tackle the future of human rights for women, from violence towards women, reproductive rights, to equal pay and power in politics and the media. Can you tell us about your brainchild and why you felt compelled, all of you, to create this series and to tell these stories?
Thank you, and thanks for having me. Well, it's our brainchild. And just picking up from what Karen said, when she told me a bit about the project was very much anchored around Linda's memoir, Fairly Equal, Lawyer in the Feminist Revolution. And I got a copy of the book and read it in short order and was very immersed, not just in the sort of personal life story of growing up in a time where women's rights were barely thought of and secondary, and how Linda's own history, lived experience of coming into the annoying experience of being treated second class, if you will, but also working towards lawyering the feminist revolution in Canada and doing present cases before the Supreme Court and really key things. So it was very much our brainchild. And we were trying to figure out how could it be adopted? And if so, how could the book and Linda's work be captured and adopted into some kind of a media, multimedia project? And we kicked it around and had a number of meetings and discussions, and collectively, in part with Elaine Waithglass's suggestion too, to look at and think about some of the work that was being done in podcast land and in masterclass land. So that was kind of the germ of us thinking about, well, let's get Linda in conversation today with an intergenerational group of women activists from different ages, lawyers, scholars, thinkers, journalists, about how they're seeing and living and trying to empower all of us, men and women, boys and girls, around human rights, of which obviously women's rights are human rights. And looking at it historically, looking at the things that a lot of the newer generations taking for granted, and grounding that in what's being challenged right now.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Just wonderful stuff. Linda, you definitely and expertly host these first two episodes and all of them, but the ones that are on YouTube now, everyone, I invite you to check it out. It's wonderful. It's called Fairly Equal: Conversations Toward a Feminist Future. And I love the section in your book, Fairly Equal: Lawyering the Feminist Revolution, that states, and I quote, "I always felt that working for equality was a very fine goal to have in life. It was more important to me than making money. I had to make a living and I did all that, but that wasn't really the goal of my life. The goal of my life really has been to seek justice and fairness and equality." Can you speak more to that quote from your book and why this is all such important stuff for you?
When I started and when women of my generation started, there were really very, very few rights. I mean, I think the first speech I ever gave on family law once I was a lawyer was, well, you might get a modest amount of support if you weren't a bad girl and committed adultery or was cruel. Mm-hmm. And you might get a tiny amount of child support, but I can't guarantee that you'll even get custody. I mean, that's where it started with family laws. There was no such thing as equal pay. There was no such thing as childcare. When my daughter was born, and I felt that I wanted to tell young women of today, please don't take it for granted. Please pay attention. Please be vigilant. Make sure that you keep what we've mm-hmm. worked so hard yeah. to get for you and take it further. Take mm-hmm. it further. Yes. Because while we achieved a lot, there's a lot still remaining to be done. And a lot of young people think if they're not paid equally, it's something wrong with them rather mm-hmm. than a systemic problem. And I encourage them to think about the systemic issues that affect society as a whole. And those are the changes that need to be made. Well, with pay equity and the conversation we had with Mary Cornish and Constance Backhouse, and Mary Cornish was the founder of the Equal Pay Coalition in 1976.
Wow.
And they worked for pay equity laws. And finally, in 1986, we got in a law with the help of the Equal Pay Coalition and lots of women supporting it that said women had to be paid equally with men. And in 1986, it was 64 cents on the dollar for every man earned, and now it's 68 cents on the dollar.
That's terrible.
We haven't come far enough. And that's an example of what I want young people to say. These are problems that I want to help to resolve and to continue the fight, mm-hmm. to continue the struggle.
Incredible. I can't even get over the story in the book about Hard House and how you wanted to go see Stephen Lewis speak. And it took 15 years to overturn that decision that women weren't allowed to be part of that, right? Women weren't allowed to ask questions. They weren't allowed to attend, I don't even believe. And you fought for this.
Well, I was in first year university. Hard House, I didn't even know it existed till somebody said there's going to be this debate. And several of us said, oh, that sounds exciting. John F. Kennedy. And he was debating Stephen Lewis. And at that time, Hard House, but it was men only. Men only. 1919, it was set up that way. And I'm sure in 1919, nobody even thought twice about it. Well, over the years, they gradually decided that when they had these big debates, once a year, they might allow women in, right? Not to say anything, just to be window dressing. Well, we wanted to come in and see this debate with Stephen Lewis and John F. Kennedy. And we even made an appointment to see the head of Hard House, the executive director, then called the warden, if you'll.
Sounds like prison.
And we asked so nicely. Please, sir, you know, let this be the debate that we can watch. He says there'll be a lot of activity. We don't have any room. There, dear. I mean, we were so condescended to. I can remember it to this day. We weren't admitted. We picketed outside in the rain with big signs of equality for women.
Yes.
But there was no such thing then as feminism or anything, or equality. I'd never heard the word equality at the time. And we didn't really think we were starting a movement, but that was really the first time that I ever said, the hell with this. This isn't fair. We have to do something about it.
Oh, you're terrific.
15 years, yeah. And that was 15 years later. I think a lot more women came along after to say, this isn't fair. This isn't fair. This isn't fair. And eventually the
acquiesced.
City of Toronto said to the Hard House Trust, don't you think you should consider changing that rule under current circumstances? And they did.
Yeah. Karen, you're nodding vigorously as we're talking about all this. Like, can you believe this? Because you're in another generation.
And this was the thing. When we were recording these conversations, there was one point where I was sitting with Barry, you know, off the side, watching everything so carefully. And I looked at Barry and I just said, wow, what we are doing is going to let people really understand where we are, where we've been, and where we're going. And that totally freaked me out. Like, I just kind of looked, Barry, I don't know if you remember, I looked over at you and was just like,
I do.
This is good, right? What we're doing is really good. And I work with young people, and I remember asking some young students once, do you feel that you have equality? And they were like, yeah, yeah, we're fine. So it's exactly what Linda said. They didn't see that as a challenge to them. They weren't really taking that in. Right. And, you know, I would tell them anecdotally about things that happened when I was younger and starting in the industry. They just couldn't see it like that. They just thought nothing holds them back, and not understanding how that can change like that.
Wow. Barry, what was that first meeting like when you all got together to talk about this and to create this?
Oh, it was quite intense because we're all talkers and we were all talking over each other and had lots of very interesting ideas. And we all came with our personal anecdotes, either from lived experience and clearly talking a lot about Linda's book, and also talking about whatever we had been digesting in social media, in the news. There were a lot of worrisome things, mm-hmm. big trends that were very alarming around what they call the manosphere, mm-hmm. and this unapologetic, rank misogyny mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. against women, yeah. and dismissiveness around conversations about fairness. This was just after Me Too, so even the whole question around believing women, the worry, which came to pass, unfortunately, around in the U.S., the destruction of Roe v. Wade rights. One of the things that it did for me is remind me is how soft women's gains are. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That in relation mm-hmm. to fundamental rights, women's rights are more fluid.
Yeah.
They're mm-hmm. softer.
Yeah.
They're not cemented in the way that the presumption of male privilege is cemented. Mm-hmm. I come from a more academic lens around all of this, so I think a little sociologically mm-hmm. and psychologically around it on a mass scale. And I think about something actually Margaret Atwood even said on The View that's been mm-hmm. circulating in social media, where she says, when you look at authoritarian drifts in societies, for example, which you're seeing in Europe and you're certainly seeing in the U.S., and there's been flirtation with it here in Canada, women's rights get
clobbered,
yeah. crashed and trashed. And that means it's soft. When times are better, there's largesse. But when times are tough, what gets cut?
Yeah,
childcare, equity. And so what does that tell you? Oh, we're soft. Mm-hmm. Like, we are perceived wow. as a soft cost. And that created a coalition of different women's groups. And one of the leaders of it, Linda, was in conversation with mm-hmm. in episode 2 that you can see on YouTube.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Debbie Owusu-Akia talks about having led that fight to get that ministry reinstated. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the bigger picture for me and why we have to concretize as much as possible going into the future.
Let's talk about the series. I just want to also say that was the choice to bring it to YouTube to make it accessible to everyone? Because I think it's fantastic. Anybody can watch this. Was yeah. that part of the reason? And is that where you want it to live? Or do you have other thoughts mm-hmm. on where you want it to go, Karen?
Well, initially, I think, look, we wanted to get it to the most people as possible. And YouTube does that. YouTube makes it very, very accessible. You know, it's funny, too, as I was listening to Barry and Linda talk, what I do remember, and I know Barry will really appreciate this from the point of view as a filmmaker. Our conversations, I don't know, each one was 2.5 to 3 hours solid. And when we started to put it together, and, you know, I'm tasked with editing and Barry's tasked with story editing and Linda's reviewing everything. And part of me is like, I don't know, I'm fascinated. Let's just run the whole 2.5 hours. But realizing that, okay, it's YouTube. Yeah, so yeah. that's what we had to aim for. But that way, anyone can watch it. And that's what we wanted more than anything, is for people of all ages, from all over. It's not geo-blocked on YouTube. You can see it anywhere.
That's the thing with the social media these days. Not only is it accessible widely, but it's accessible permanently. Mm-hmm. Whereas if it's on a broadcast vehicle, it's shown once, twice, three times, whatever. It's not necessarily.
It's limited.
It's available. And since I want to see the young people learn about all this, I feel that if we have a few ideas planted here and there about where to go and somebody picks up on it, that would be great. Also, I would like it to be used as an educational tool, if that's at all possible. Yeah. And I think it's easier if it's on social media.
And I just would add that in the early days, we did talk to the more conventional broadcasters.
Yes.
And I think they were, it ranged from terrified to intrigued.
That's a good way to put it.
The F word, feminism. And I said, well, no, you know, it could be this, it could be that. And there was various degrees of interest. So we decided, and Linda also worked very hard to make sure that we had the resources for it to do it with some fundraising.
For sure. Let's talk about that, because that's very important to get behind it. Let's talk about the fundraising.
Well, it certainly wasn't easy to find supporters. There's a limited number of people who, for whom the word feminist is a draw rather than a problem. And our major donor was the wonderful philanthropist Shirley Greenberg, who was an Ottawa family lawyer. Now she has passed away, in fact, and we've dedicated the series to her memory and in thanks to her for her immediate and quick support of this project. But listen, it also couldn't have happened without Barry and Karen signing on and being extremely supportive, because I think it's gotten to be somewhat more work than any of us had imagined.
How can we get people involved to support this project? How can people get in on this and get behind it?
I want people to want to see more conversations. You know, it was so hard. And since we finished it, when I've told it to people, they've been like, oh, I know a great person for you to talk to. And I'm like, okay. But now help us get it out there so that Linda can talk to more people. That we, you know, one of the things that we were very conscious of is also that we represented different eras of feminism, and that we saw what was happening today, but also really respecting the past and where we came from.
Yes.
And so the more people that we can include in this conversation and the more voices, for me, that would be just the best.
That's so wonderful. We'll be sure to share how you can get involved and where to watch the series and how to connect on social media at the end of the show. We're going to go on a short commercial break right now. When we come back, we'll hear all about the first few episodes of Fairly Equal: Conversations Towards a Feminist Future. Be right back. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio. I'm here with Karen Shopsiewicz, Barry Cohn, and Linda Silver-Dranoff, who were talking about their new web series, Fairly Equal: Conversations Towards a Feminist Future. So let's talk about the first two episodes. We watched them. They're wonderful. Mm. The first one was Violence Towards Women. Can you tell us a little bit about that episode? That was some very powerful stuff.
Oh, well, you know, violence against women is something that we've been trying to deal with for a very long time. The real watershed mark in Canadian history with respect to women was the Royal Commission on the Status of Women that reported in 1970. And they talked about all the ways in which the position and status of women need to be improved. And by the way, That Royal Commission happened under Lester B. Pearson's prime ministership, but it wouldn't have happened if there wasn't a woman in the cabinet, Judy LaMarche, and a woman outside gathering the forces. Laura Sabia threatened to march 1 million or 2 million women to Ottawa if he didn't set up a Royal Commission. So Royal Commission was set up with the wonderful Florence Byrd, who was a journalist, and they reported, but they mentioned nothing about violence against women. It was like, those weren't shasha, right? Don't talk about this. And that's the fascinating thing, because then in 2017, we had the Me Too movement. So between those 50, 55 years, things happened, but they happened very gradually. It's still difficult to deal with these issues. And laws have changed over the years. In 1983 was the first time ever that rape by a husband to his wife was considered a criminal offense. And we had to fight to get that in the laws. There's assault laws now. There are laws that help, but there are still problems with enforcement. And what we had were people who could talk about those issues in the first issue. One, Deepa Mattu, who is the lawyer and executive director for the Barbara Schleifer Clinic, that helps women in those kinds of circumstances. So she really talked about the kinds of experience that she had. And Elizabeth Renzetti, a journalist who has done investigative work, so could come up with information from that perspective. But, and we talked about what we hope were some of the solutions for dealing with these issues. In other words, putting ideas out there so the people who are carrying the torch forward will have some fuel in their torch.
Well, and one of those solutions which came up in the episode is also education and what that looks like and where does it begin. And Elizabeth Renzetti talks a lot about that. And I'm thinking of that film, for example, in the UK, jumped on it very quickly. That series that was Adolescence was incredible, award-winning series about a young teenage boy who lied about the assault and the complete disregard for young girls around him. That has led to educational changes in England, in the UK.
Thank God.
Very quickly. It didn't take a Royal Commission. It took a TV series and then people so outraged about it that changes were demanded. And it's the mechanism of demand and follow through. In addition to the law and enforcement is education. And that's a strong thread in the conversation that Linda leads with Elizabeth and Deepa.
And it's just that idea of starting education really, really young, not waiting too late, but really bringing it in to the classroom.
But when you look at what they do in Finland or in Sweden or in Nordic countries and in Denmark around education and around human rights and boundaries, and regulating anger, right? Regulating emotion.
Anger management.
Anger management, relating to each other, putting the screens and the phones away so you actually have to deal and build empathy and all of these important social skills that work towards mitigating violence against women.
Incredible. What has the reaction been, Karen? Because I know many of your students at Centennial, where you teach film and television and digital and all the rest. What has their reaction been to all of this?
This is what was great, was we shot it at Centennial College's Story Arts Center in our studio. And we put together a crew of, a professional director of photography and sound person. But then one of the things that was really important for me was bringing in some current students and some grads and watching their faces as we were doing this. I remember at the end, Linda, you kindly offered up your book. And all of a sudden they were like, I'm getting it. I'm taking the book. I need to get the book. And they just sat there just fascinated by it. So I think that was really important to have them as our audience and to really see how it resonated with them, this next generation of the ones that will take this forward. And since we've released it, a few of them have reached out to me as they've watched the episodes and seen how it's come together. And they've been so excited about it and sharing it with their friends. And so that was really meaningful to me, and also seeing the reaction that these young people in their 20s had of just, wow.
because they're going to be the change makers, right? They're going to be the new thought leaders and change makers who are going to help. The second episode is all about something that I'm very interested in because of my husband, Dr. Liebrecht.
Yes.
That you did an episode on reproductive rights. Can you tell us what that was all about?
Well, we had a young woman who's at the current iteration of Planned Parenthood. So she works in the area of reproduction. And Leisha Torrey was a young woman who's working in the area of menstrual rights. That's something very new. That was a very interesting session because we had the perspective of young women in their 20s. And so their experiences, their expectations, what their communities were feeling at the time was a very educational experience, I think, for me. And I think it will be for people who are watching. And of course, we talked about the right to abortion. And I was part of that campaign to support Dr. Henry Morgenthaler, who was the doctor who led the way toward changing the Canadian criminal code to permit women with, if it was medically advisable, to have an abortion. Because in Canada until 1967, abortion was a criminal offense, period. By 1988, the Supreme Court of Canada finally decriminalized abortion. In that instance, there was finally one woman on the Supreme Court of Canada, Justice Bertha Wilson. And she wrote a concurring opinion where she really spoke powerfully about what women's needs are. And I think having a woman there where decisions are made is very important. And
Absolutely.
So all the young women who are watching the series have to understand that they have to be in positions of power sometimes in order to make the change or to keep the change that we have secured to date.
It's fascinating stuff. One of the conversations that really stood out for me is around period poverty for women not having supplies and how initiatives like the Period Project are creating real change. It was wonderful to see this being talked about, something that many people don't realize is happening right here in Canada. Can you speak to that, Barry, Karen, about this fascinating Period Project?
Well, Karen was the one who actually put me onto it because I think she had been following Leisha Torrey's work.
I got an email talking about what she was doing.
Really?
Yeah.
And she was a student originally from Mauritius. She was a student in Newfoundland at the university, and she started doing activism around that because she recognized that there were problems around what many may take for granted, depending on, you know, your position in society and class and all of that. And she really has an intersectional lens, a more racialized lens, that there are women from different communities, different ethnic backgrounds who may not have the same degree of access to and be able to afford period products. And this was a big concern for her. So she set about collecting and then donating period products, for which led to other kinds of activism.
Wow.
For which she was awarded a prize in 2025. And I think she's all of 28 years old or something.
Yeah, when we were doing this, when we started digging into this topic, I, and Barry, you probably did this too, I just started following everybody with an interesting voice in terms of this topic. And that really helped because I wanted to expose myself to as many voices that there are out there so that we could see what we wanted to bring into this series. And she was just so inspiring.
We hired actually a wonderful researcher to work with us, Denise Benson, who's a senior researcher in the documentary world. And we had given her an assignment to, you know, connect us up. Here's where we were connected. Here were some of our gaps.
The holes, the gaps.
Yeah,
who's on
yeah.
the cutting right. edge? Who's doing all this amazing work? So she was the one who found Debbie Owusu-Akia. And she was doing a lot of education and outreach and co-coordinating around that through the new Action Canada. And a very, very savvy, amazing speaker, educator, very knowledgeable also about feminist history. And one of the reasons why we tasked our researcher with this stuff is because there are, unlike the past, there is a kind of splintering of groups. There's no one umbrella group like there was with the National Action Committee on the Status of Women, which Linda is very knowledgeable about and was very involved with. That doesn't exist. It lost its funding under Harper and so on.
No, that was under Mulroney.
Mulroney.
Harper did other things.
Okay. But there's an example, coming back to what I said in the beginning, by the way, around soft power and around soft rights. It's like, oh, we're cost-cutting, so they're gone. They don't matter anyway. Right. Women's rights and a national action committee around women's rights don't matter anymore. So what you have are some really interesting groups out there. Yes. And our question was, to what extent are they connected?
Yes.
And how are they working together? And Debbie's work at Action Canada is one of those nodal points that actually is connected to a bunch of other groups that are taken up with different kinds of LGBTQ rights, with trans rights, with intersectional rights, different ethnic rights, and the way in which ethnicity and class and your definition and lived experience as a woman is going to be lived a little differently. Mm-hmm. And we can't all represent the same exact thing at the same time. But that doesn't prevent us from having conversations and looking at commonality.
I know this is sort of presented in this sort of interview format, but it has this documentary feel to it. It's like one thing is leading to another. Do you sense that? And how does that manifest itself?
So it has a documentary feel because that's our background, Karen and I, and our background is also in crafting stories so that it's going to have a kind of flow. We want viewers, listeners to be able to have that sense of momentum around Linda's questions. So they were crafted that way to sort of build to problems, history, solutions, ideas around that.
Yeah. So solutions were a big part.
Big part. We just don't want to identify problems and leave it at that, because that just leaves people feeling powerless.
Of course. I'm excited for you and for this series. I think it's wonderful. What is happening in episode 3? What's coming up?
Yes,
Janice Rubin.
Who's
an employment lawyer, and Danielle Bisnar, who's an employment lawyer. But Janice really invented the new field of helping companies resolve these problems, hopefully before they reach the problem stage. And if not, like, for instance, she was the investigator when Gian Gomeshi at the CBC was charged with improper behavior, and she was retained by the CBC to do an investigation of it and to see what happened.
Yes.
So we talked about discrimination in employment. Mm-hmm. We talked about harassment issues. We talked about abuse issues. And in each episode, we talked about intersectionality. We talked about my pet question, do we need another national organization? The one we had years ago, the National Action Committee on the Status of Women, so that with one voice, women are able to say to government, we're more than 50% of the population.
Yes.
And this is what we need, all of us need. Because as far as I can see, pay equity is an issue that covers everybody. Mm-hmm. Equality is an issue that covers everybody. And so is childcare, so and so forth. So that's the third episode.
And I want to add to that, that one thing that was really interesting with that third episode, because we look at workplace harassment in the traditional way, in that you've got some jerk in the office who's doing whatever, but also looking at it today, where it also gets into deep fake technology and online harassment and the next level of harassment that we never would have thought of even 10 years ago as being a part of workplace harassment.
Yeah. And Danielle Bisnar is a new generation lawyer. She's Indigenous and has led some pretty interesting cases around women, migrant workers, who, because of their status, were sexually harassed and abused in the field, looking at the ways in which racialized nurses are treated. Mm-hmm. So when you look, for example, in the Fraser case, what that is essentially is that the adverse impact on RCMP officers who were women who, because of childcare needs, had to take time off and therefore got less pension benefits or less benefits period because of the less hours worked because they were busy with childcare.
Right.
Well, that has an adverse impact.
Right. And that case was decided.
Was it?
It was decided at the Supreme Court of Canada.
Okay.
Justice Rosalie Silberman-Abella was the one who wrote the decision. And as Danielle said, that they were blessed because she really understands those issues, having done in 1984 a report on that kind of employment equity for the Ontario government.
So, thanks, yeah, for that's that a, correction. Thanks for that's remembering important. That. Yeah. That's important because it also, again, reinforcing Linda's point that you've got to be at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Whether it's in the courts, Supreme Court, in politics, our fifth episode is on women in politics, women and in journalism.
And journalism.
And, right.
journalism,
right.
and you've got yeah. to be there because lived experience matters.
Of course. Of course. Right. Barry, was there a moment during the filming that surprised you thus far or gave you hope? An epiphany of sorts where you had hope and optimism for us as women?
I always have hope when I hear women talk about ideas. I think the optimism and the hope was peppered throughout, but it was especially in the second episode with Debbie and Lycia and the energy they bring to the task at hand, being in their late 20s, early 30s.
Amazing.
And the grasp of the issues, the drive, the energy, the savvy to be good communicators, because that's what it's going to take.
Absolutely.
To reach out to all genders, if you will, to get everybody on side that women's rights are human rights.
The fourth one we haven't talked about yet on pay equity and childcare had, I thought as I was introducing them, I called them feminist warriors because that's how I felt like we were all had been through the battles. And Mary Cornish, with the pay equity battle, and Constance Backhouse, who's a professor of law but has been active in the childcare. And there again, gave that from the level of her experience, it gave Constance, for example, an opportunity to say, childcare should be available, and that's been a pet of mine anyway, which should be available in the schools, just like the public schools pay for the care of the children from the age that kindergarten starts. We should have childcare right alongside it in all the schools. And so it, for me, was lovely to see that idea, you know, out there from an...
Right. For,
yes, for free. For free.
Yeah, totally.
And for
absolutely.
Free.
Absolutely.
Right.
The Fairly Equal series takes on some incredibly complex and at times heavy topics, as you've been talking about, from violence to representation. When you step back from it all, what thread connects all of these conversations together, the through line, if you will? Don't answer that just yet. We're going to go on a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio. And before the commercial, I was just asking you, Linda, what is the thread that connects all of these conversations together?
Well, it's the vigilance, pay attention, and sisterhood.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Women will keep advancing if we work together in sisterhood.
Yes.
Rather than be complicit in permitting the patriarchy to continue to make rules that affect women adversely.
Mm-hmm. And families.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that came across very much in the first episode is how it doesn't help men and boys either.
Right. Mm-mm. Absolutely right. Well, that's why I'm distinguishing between the patriarchy and men.
Right.
I've had a lot of male allies through all the years and all the struggles. But the concept, the patriarchy, the structure, that's where the battle is against.
I'm always ever the optimist. But throughout all five of them, we're dealing with, as you say, pretty heavy stuff.
Yes.
But there's always a sense of hope and that there is change as possible if, as Linda says, there's vigilance. And also, as Barry's brought up, too, just the awareness and the education And I think that that was something that tied it all together. And when you talk about the inspiring moment, like when we had Mary Cornish and Constance, these are feminist warriors. And I yes. was like, try not to fangirl, because they were people that you'd read about. You know, I think yes. Mary sent us a picture from the 70s mm-hmm. where she's at a protest and is as strong as she is today. It's and that hard. Was, for me, absolute inspiration. And then the young voices that I know are going to take us into the future.
You know, and let me just add one other thing, because we haven't talked about episode 5 and on mm-hmm. the concept of having people at the table. Yeah. Two of the three that talked about politics and journalism are in Parliament right
in
now.
In Parliament.
Karina yeah. Gould and Cheen Again.
Cheen.
Right? Wow. And we also had an Indigenous journalist, Karine Pablese. Mm-hmm. And these are all people who are in the places where things can happen.
Where do you see the real momentum of change happening in women's rights right now?
I think all of the people in there that represent these different yeah. areas, yeah. so women's advocacy, the stuff that Leisha's doing, the stuff that Debbie's doing, all that is bringing right. the momentum. The politicians, the journalists, the legal battles yes. that are being fought, that's the momentum that's pulling
well,
us.
Well, also at the ground level. It's at yeah. individuals doing what they can, getting together and organizing where they see mm. something that needs to be done, and then maybe taking it, depending on the issue, to one of the national organizations that do exist, Women's Legal mm-hmm. Education and Action from the Canadian Women's Foundation. There's a number of women's shelters that need help mm-hmm. all the time.
Strategic galvanizing things. Mm-hmm. may not be specifically in Canada, apart from childcare, because we really have to keep pushing mm. on that front. But the harassment that women, especially mm. women journalists, feel, and the intimidation, mm-hmm. I think that's something definitely is a huge galvanizing thing. I see it in the social media, in the Canadian mm-hmm. space, the way in which younger women are just completely outraged. And the fact that right now, I think it's in Texas, but already one woman is in jail for miscarriage.
And she wow. couldn't get medical help because her doctor was afraid wow. of being sent to jail.
But these are things, and Linda does talk with Debbie and Leisha in episode 2 about these kinds of things and the way in which Debbie, through Action Canada, is in touch with American women activists mm-hmm. around some of this stuff mm-hmm. and how Canada is helping, how women's mm-hmm. organizations in Canada are trying to help. Oh. But these are very life and death things. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, without getting too far into international politics, the outrage over how women are treated in other jurisdictions. And I think the local is global and vice versa. And political, and these are galvanizing points as well mm-hmm. that get women talking to each other, sharing nice. Information, and trying to raise awareness wherever we can.
Wherever we can. Exactly, exactly. Linda, you've been at the forefront of this work for decades. There's so much history behind this work, so much lived experience. What has it felt like for you to see these conversations in this new generation? When you look at where you've come, what are you most proud of?
Well, actually, it was thrilling. The conversations were so much better and more interesting and came up with ideas that I hadn't thought of. It was very exciting for me because I saw the possibility of the work continuing.
Yes.
And to me, that's the most important thing, that women are never going to be handed the keys to the kingdom. You know, yeah. We have to work, but we have to feel we're entitled to it. And we have to take charge of our own future. I figured that out sometime in my late 20s when I suddenly realized all the things that I'd been taught were the role of women. Mm-hmm. And I realized that that had sent me in very wrong direction. And from then on, I was going to take control of my own life. And I think that that attitude is a helpful one because it helps you pick your own and choose your own way ahead. And in the process of doing it, I found a way to help a lot of other women. And that's very
incredible.
Very incredible.
Karen, for someone listening who feels small in the face of some of these really big issues, what is one thing they can do to be part of the solution?
Well, not to sound like I'm just
touting ourselves.
Series. No, I really mean it. Like, watch the series, read up on it. One of the things that I love is that Linda and Barry put together a list of resources on the website. And that for me is really important because it shows how you can get involved in any way in an organization that's going to resonate with who you are.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the biggest things that we have in our power is awareness mm-hmm. and understanding what is going on. And so watching the series, checking out the resources that are listed on the website, really becoming part of the conversation, that for me is one step that you can take without being afraid. Like what you said, Linda, you know, there's at the end of one of the episodes, you say, I learned something, but I'm not telling you what it is. And for me, the experience was in every episode, I learned many things, and I will tell you what it is. So that gives us power. That education, that understanding is what's right. going to take us forward.
Well, and I think that when you get involved in some of the groups that we list in the resources, whether it's protests, letter writing, petitions, mm-hmm. showing up, there are action items that can be done, good old-fashioned actions that can be taken mm-hmm. with a sense of playfulness, too. I think that was one mm-hmm. of the things that Constance Backhouse, she's the legal scholar and feminist historian and author who's still teaching at Ottawa U, I believe, in episode 4. And she says there's a sense of play that can happen mm-hmm. around it, whether it's donning costumes. There was a story that was told, for example,
oh,
when
story.
Mary and yes. Linda, you'll have to help me out with the yeah. story in the 70s.
I remember it.
Okay. When Mary Cornish was in Ontario and trying to get, you know, pay equity off the ground, I think they were selling hot dogs.
They were selling hot dogs.
Hot dogs
outside the Ministry of Labor.
Yeah.
Outside wow. the Ministry of Labor. And they had one price for men.
Men?
And one price for women.
58 yeah. cents. Because at that time, it was 58 cents for women and a dollar for men. And so they sold
That's
women
great.
Would pay 58 yeah. cents for a hot dog and men would pay a dollar. It was ingenious.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
And so we need that kind of playfulness.
Yes.
We need that kind of, and we are seeing it in some places, certainly in song and pop culture.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's some really interesting young women artists right now or mm-hmm. women identified. Artists right now who are doing some really interesting work around this mm-hmm. kind of stuff, but showing up, amplifying the voices of those other activists mm-hmm. as well, and signing the petitions and writing the letters and amplifying.
Great. Great.
One person can do a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That major change can be made by one or two or three people together. Never think that just because you
we're
have
one person
on your own, that you're one yeah. person, you can still have a great impact.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And you also never know. Mm. I always tell people when they complain, whether it's about human rights, women's rights issues, or some other sense of inequity or unfairness, I'll say, oh, here, you should write a letter to this or to that. And they're like, nah, I'm not going to bother. I'm like, you never know. Your mm-hmm. letter could be the
one. So, Barry, if you could each share one shift that would move us towards a more fairly equal future, what would it be?
Oh, I'd like to see a female prime minister.
Yeah.
Same.
That'd be nice. Linda?
I'd like to see, yeah.
Well, yes. I don't think it's only one thing. I would hate to pick yeah. one thing mm-hmm. and then somebody in power say, okay, you've got that one thing. Yeah. Right. Because even if you have one prime minister, you need the prime minister with a cabinet. There's really no one thing that's too limiting, I'm afraid. And I would not want to put one.
Yeah, fair enough.
If I had to limit it to one thing, I'd say equality for all people.
Mm. Lovely.
That's what I'd say.
Lovely.
Yeah. One thing, equality. Thank you.
I'll just my addendum to that is a feminist minded education. From mm-hmm. nursery school,
nice.
Primary school onward.
I would like to see women and everyone and the equality, but really the use of social media as a way to give voice and not to mm-hmm. silence voices. Mm-hmm. Because I think that right now it's super powerful. We're using it to promote the series. But I think that women, mm-hmm. like having that awareness of how they can use that in a way that's really going to move us forward is super important. And to have that across the board in terms of an equalizer and not a divider.
That's so great.
Yeah.
For any of our guests, for any of you, if someone is listening and is feeling overwhelmed by the state of the world right now, I'll raise my hand. What would you want them to hold on to?
We live in Canada.
Yeah.
Which is really good.
We're lucky to live in Canada.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That that we have to pay attention and make sure we keep the things that we've developed. Be grateful for the fact that Pierre Trudeau was smart enough when he was prime minister to push in that we should have a Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Mm-hmm. And in that Charter of Rights and Freedoms, we have Section 15, which gives women equality rights.
Wonderful.
And there's a Section 28 that says men and women have to be treated equally. And the U.S. doesn't have it. Many other places don't have it. That's a hopeful sign for anybody who wants to just remember that we have those benefits use them.
What would you like people to feel or walk away with after watching your new web series, Fairly Equal? What do you want people to get from this?
The one thing I would say is that when you're watching it, know that each of the women that we're featuring, and Linda included, started somewhere.
Yeah.
And they found that voice and kept going with that voice to educate and to make change. And that can happen for anyone.
It's fabulous. There's a question that we ask everyone at the end of the show. And of course, we're going to ask it to all of you. So I'm going to start with, what is bliss for Barry Cohn?
My dog.
Oh,
Yes, family and health, but being able to walk among the trees. I think nature is a greatly undervalued source of healing, and we don't partake of it enough. We're connected to it. And Ricky Gervais has this wonderful thing that if there is God, it's a dog.
It's a dog.
It's a dog.
It's true.
It's from God. And, you know, a higher power, because they're just so amazing creatures. And it's
You're right. My dog
and walking my kooky, crazy dog and walking with her in the woods whenever I can get to the woods.
Thank you for that. That's fabulous. Great. Linda Silver-Dranoff, what is bliss for you?
Well, I think of it in a broader sense of feeling fortunate that I've been able in my adult life to find the path that was right for me and to live it and to know how to make the decisions to go forward, to live it in the way that I considered important. And part of that is helping others to do the same thing. And this series is just part of that. As I said earlier, once I took control of my own life, I've done it my way, and I'm really happy that it's worked out. That's bliss.
That's so lovely. Thank you for that. And Karen, I've asked you this before. What is bliss these days for Karen Shopsowitz?
I mean, for me, it's family and being able to be outside and breathe. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, if I'm stressed, the best thing I can do is just go outside and walk around the block. And just know that I have that ability to do that. I can't take the cat out, but I can go myself or with my husband. And that's a big help. And just being able to, I know this sounds really contrite, but being able to work on projects like this, that you know somebody will say that made a difference, is probably one of the biggest highs I get out of life.
It's really been an honor to have all of you on this program today. I have to say thank you all very, very much. It was delightful to have you here. Thank you all so much.
Thank you for your participation.
What is the best way? I want to really punctuate this so that people can all tune in to Fairly Equal. So number one, how can people watch? How can we connect to you on social media and on your website?
Follow us on Instagram at Fairly Equal Series. Go to our website and subscribe to us on YouTube, because that's when you'll see each new release. We're releasing them every couple of weeks, and watch it. But also following us on Instagram, we are releasing extras and neat
and engage with it. There's
and
you
engage.
Know,
talk to us.
And, yeah. That's be polite,
so
but
yes,
always. Be polite.
Always. Our audience is very polite. Thank you
nice
all
people.
Very, very much. Thank you.
Thanks, Judy.
I would love to thank our wonderful guests, Karen Shopsowitz, Barry Cohn, and Linda Silver-Dranoff, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Mag Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, Chelsea Lockstedt, Associate Producer Lori Quinn, Eva Shabatai, Olivia Vigiani, Audio Engineer Giuliani Annunziello, Senior Editor Lauren Kaminsky, Video Editor Sierra Brown-Rodriguez, Audio Producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. And as well, Thank you to Garrett Flores for the beautiful pink roses that adorn our set each week. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.